A huge shout out of thanks to our major sponsor, Pertec. If you have Pertec on your team, they will never let you down. Visit Pertec at pertec.com.au.
I think I'm doing the podcast by myself. Oh, hey! The man.
It's been a big day.
It has. It has been. The man. Only the best.
It's the end of a day. We're going back-to-back podcast.
Oh.
I've just sprayed.
So what I love about that shameless plug, for the guys listening on the Apple Podcast or the Spotify, maybe driving, but then there'll be some maybe watching. But the ones listening, just to put you in the picture, I'm sitting with Tyson Pedro drinking a DrinkWest beer that also says official partner of the UFC. Mate, like, we've obviously have to go to your own fighting career, Tyson,
yep.
World-class pro. We've definitely got to go down there, but your business side as well. Like, this is true. I'm enjoying a beer that you own.
Yeah.
So we need to go there. We need to go. I want to go through all your influences in your career. I want to talk about your father, who mixed martial arts world is. He's the god, as far as what I remember when I met him. So I'd like to hear it from you.
I don't know if we'd say
the godfather. Well, when I say that, mate, why don't I just start there? So, quick intro: Tyson Pedro, UFC legend, representing Western Sydney to the rest of the world. How does that sound?
Yeah, I'll take it.
You like that intro?
Yeah, I'll take it. I'll take it. It's come a long way. I think we trained with. Well, I think you've had James Tahuna on here, haven't you?
So, yes.
And Brad Morris and then myself. So we used to train out of a garage in Cranbrook, and Dad was obviously teaching us. So three guys that Dad trained out of a garage in Cranbrook made it to the UFC.
Wow. I have to – in fact, I'd love to do a podcast with your dad one day.
Yeah.
When I first met your dad, I don't know what you were doing at the time. I love James Tahuna. Mm. You know that. I love him. But I did work for him as his conditioner at one stage when I was at the Parramatta Eels and he used to come in. Now, the first day I ever met your father, I asked James to bring some fighters in. This was 2009. The Eels at that stage weren't going too well. The captain, Nathan Kalis, was the New Zealand captain at the time. He almost pleaded with his players after a game to not give up on the season. I had to team up with him on that, and I went and I promised him we need to do something that brings this character out in people where they will not give up for the rest of the year. So to speed up that story, they ended up winning a whole heap of games and made the grand final. Mm. Lost to Melbourne,
yep.
But their season was basically over at this stage. Now, there's a lot of things that come into place, how the coach certain players, whatever. But this moment sticks in my head when we asked James to bring some fighters in the gym and he brought your father. And I remember meeting him and James had so much respect for him. Like, I'd heard about him, but I hadn't realised that the way James and the way Tama introduced your dad was like he was the man. Mm. You just probably just see him as dad. They saw him as this figure that they had so much respect for. So I'd like to ask you about that. Just on that story, that day, probably
is
wouldn't
this
do
where
it.
He told all the players, like, pretty much, like, I shouldn't have to come to tell you to be professionals. Was that the one?
He probably delivered that. Yeah. I can't remember that on that day, but yeah. He did, like. What I wanted out of it was I wanted to see character in players that would go on that year and not give up. Mm. Now, some things happened that day. Daniel Mortimer hadn't even played NRL yet and he jumps in. And I remember Lucas Brown, Big Daddy, was there as one of the group of fighters that came. And he jumped out of the boxing ring and said, you need him in your team. Mm. That character, like Daniel Mortimer was tiny. But he had this heart that he said, you need him in your team. Mm. Other things happened. I remember, James, you'd love this one. Tahuna grabs Luke Burt by the back of the neck and punches him at the same time as he pulled his head down. Tiny little punch, but his nose just
splattered.
And I probably wouldn't do that to any players anymore.
Yeah.
They get enough head knocks. So I probably wouldn't do that. Usually just go to the body these days. But what I loved is Luke Burt kept going. And that's what we asked the fighters to do, is bring this out in a person.
Bring the fight out.
Yeah. And
everyone's got it in them.
Yeah. And that year they played a semi-final against the Dragons, and Wendell Saylor, this huge figure in the game, big man too, he's opposite Luke Burt in a semi-final, and he puts it on Bertie mentally and physically, and says, "Hey, I'm coming at you the whole game." Now, I remember I was about 2 meters away and I heard it. And even for me, I was like a trainer running the coach's messages. I heard Wendell say this and I was like, oh, that was intimidating. But I just, all of a sudden, I remember that moment of the day your dad came with the fighters.
Mm.
And I said to Bertie, I said, "Mate, you've had the toughest man in Australia bust your face and you didn't take a backward step. Are you you're not going to take that off Wendell?" And anyway, the game went on. Bertie, something happened, we scored. Bertie went up to Wendell and said, "Hey, 1-0, Del," you know. And Wendell's such a champion, mate. He is the best sportsman, the sportsmanship as well. Like at the end of the game, he went to Bertie and said, "Mate, I tried to crack you and you wouldn't crack."
Mm.
And I just went back to that day with your dad. I know I've gone off on a tangent there, mate. No, like I'm just telling stories here.
No.
But your dad had this aura about him.
Yeah, he still does. And like... full disclosure, I get jealous of it sometimes. Like,
do you?
No, not, it's because it's just not me. I'm more of an introvert. My dad's dad's similar in with Ty, that he can walk into any room and everyone loves him. Like, it's his personality, it's who he is. I'm just more of an introvert. Like, it takes a lot for me to go out and talk to people. Like, even these podcasts and stuff, sometimes I have to just like refresh after a while to talk so much. Like, I've had to train myself to do it with, like the fighting and everything. I would rather just sit by myself and not do this.
Wow.
Yeah.
Hey, so this is an exclusive, everybody.
But it's part of the game. So I've like sort of taught myself, like, you know, how to, but like, yeah, just trained in it. But
Well done on that, because not everyone, like, one of the biggest fear a lot of people have is speaking.
Yeah, it used to be massive, you know, for me, and like,
and that's normal.
Yeah, I remember. The GQ awards. Had to give an award to what's his name? He was the school teacher, the boxer. He beat, was it Manny Pacquiao?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I had to give him an award.
Yeah.
That's gonna burn me, that I can't remember his name. But
Jeff Horn.
Yeah. And while I was on stage, I remember everyone was planning their speech, and I started getting sweats and shaking before the thing, and I was like, still went on there and did it. But after that, because I got that fear. Then I just started, like, when I get something like that, I've got to attack it. So if, like, something, like, if I was scared of, I used to be, like, a bit scared of heights, like, then I'll go do something that's all heights. Like, that's just my mentality. Like, and that's from Dad as well.
Yeah.
Going on what you're talking about with the footy players, like, that was, I think, one thing that Dad was massively ahead of the game was with the mental side of it, like, especially with fighting. He always used to make us do tasks and stuff that would seem abnormal, but, like, that was him preparing us. Like, I remember as a kid, we'd come into the gym and Dad would be like, "Okay, go and go into like a stance, like horse stance or whichever is like the worst one. You got to stand there for like 30 minutes, but he'll like, all right, go close your eyes and then like pick 3 things that you could kill someone with in the room." Like, it would be like little drills like this, but he didn't realize that. Like, I remember only recently I said, "Hey Dad, have you ever tried to meditate, like, just to calm?" Because he's got a bit of anger issues. And he goes, "I don't want to get him canceled. He's not even up." But he said that, like, old school, you know, like, "Oh, don't do that fairy shit." Like,
yeah.
And I was, but the stuff that he was doing with us as kids was meditation.
It was meditation.
Yeah, it was meditation, but he just didn't like calling it that. So
yes.
He would always have us sitting there, and like, before we'd come into training, he was like, "All right, everyone, close your eyes." It was like, whatever's happened outside of the gym, whether you've got problems with your girlfriends, bills to pay, nothing. Any, like, as soon as you walk through the doors, we're in fight mode. We're only here to fight. We're only here to be better. So like all of that stuff was instilled as a kid. Like, couldn't come into the house until you'd done your 500 kicks above a certain line on the bag after school. And like, it was always extras. And like, he in his head he was training Spartans, but
yeah,
it was like we're just little kids
who have become Spartans. But you're so right. Like professional teams now will do that, deliberately put that into their schedule around their mental preparation before the day even starts. And your dad was doing it.
Yeah.
He just didn't like the word meditation. Yeah. So he had you visualizing, he had you breathing, he had you clearing your mind, he had your focus. Like your dad was a genius at that.
Yeah.
I love where you just told us about your fear, because that would relate to a lot of listeners. Like this whole podcast is about, just through chat, maybe some lesson that you'll share will accelerate someone else's life or career. And you just did it. Like you just acknowledge a pretty scary moment of getting on stage. Now, you're not scared of many things. Just to put, you're in the picture, if you don't follow UFC, just Google Tyson Pedro now. Like, you're not scared of physical.
Nah, definitely not. If it comes down to, like, you know, when someone asks me about fear, like I'll do the dumbest shit, actually. Like it's just my personality. 0-100, I'll just go do dumb stuff. But when it comes to like talking or like, you know, fear with a family or situations, like I've more feared getting into walking up to someone and getting stuck in a conversation with someone on the street than I do getting punched in the head.
Wow.
Yeah. So like these last few weeks I've been making a conscious effort to try and talk to people more, like go out of my comfort zone to talk to people. But it's like, you know, those those small conversations?
Yeah.
Like that's my worst nightmare. Like having those all day. Like
this makes this episode even more exclusive. Which now I feel like maybe you said, yeah, let's do this show, because you're in a process of going down this track. You did reply about a year ago, you said, always got time for you, bro.
Yeah.
And which I just never chased you, because you've been so busy, man.
Yeah, been trying to stay active. When idle hands make the devil's work. So I try to stay busy, otherwise I just fall off the path. Like, you know, staying busy and having a lot on my plate makes it, I think, keeps my mind a bit like straighter.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
No, that does. That does. So let's go there about the mind stuff, because I just saw Volkanovski talk about struggling with mental stuff as a fighter.
Yep.
You've been through that?
Definitely.
Yeah, okay.
Especially with my injury and the layoff, like that was 4 years. I think one of my sayings is peace through violence. And I honestly believe that me fighting and the violence and stuff, when I'm in the octagon, it's the most blissful moment that I ever experienced, because nothing else matters, especially that's come from dad. But when I walk in the octagon, I'm so tunnel visioned that it's like, that's like my happy place, right?
Yeah.
Like everything's perfect. Like it's only me and this one other guy that's like, we're just in there to essentially hurt each other. And there's nothing more perfect than that, like one hand-to-hand combat in front of, and at any moment you can be knocked out and like you're, everything's heightened, everything's like just on, you're in this flow state, and like at any time being knocked out in front of hundreds of thousands of people, it's like that creates like this adrenaline like rush, then you're trying to control all these emotions, and it's just like the perfect moment. And I think when I'm not fighting, like especially when I'm not training or having that pursuit for being the best that I can be, it's very easy to fall off.
Yeah. I love the way you've just described possibly the most scary thing for anybody else in the world in that octagon. You described it as blissful. Like it's a...
I get tingles thinking about it, like the moment.
You
like,
have, yeah. I see, yeah.
I get like it's... there's nothing like it, and that's actually also a problem, because when I'm off, like especially with when I was injured, I didn't have that... that escape, well, I would call it, it's definitely an escape. Me training and trying to better myself every day. If you don't have that, or fighting, that's what like calms my mind. Fighting calms my mind.
Yeah.
And when I don't have that, just start getting lost. I can feel like I get more edgy, like even like just small things, like be on the road and I'll get it like aggressive. Whereas if I'm fighting and stuff, that's my release.
Yeah.
So like, I think that's for everyone. Like I always tell everyone, if there's one thing that you should do is like, even those corporate boxing events or anything like that, I always recommend it because I feel like everyone needs to experience that fear, that anxiety, that like of fighting in front of your friends and family, and like also working to better yourself every day and for a goal. It's sometimes you can get stuck in the day to day. And like, I think having that, I had my uncle who I trained him for a corporate boxer, and he, one of the big experiences that he had was training so long and so hard and getting better every day, but then having the fight, the drop off after the fight was he didn't deal with very well. And
really?
Yeah. And I experienced that sometimes as well. You have this big event that you're training for and this big moment, and then it falls off. Like I think it's a bit different with football because it's every week. Whereas we have this moment, we build up and make it such a big moment, then nothing afterwards, like for the next couple of weeks. And how I dealt with it was, I figured that if I don't get back into routine as quickly as possible, so I have this big high, then you go into this dip, like these big dopamine hits. Yeah. It's like if I don't try and normalize it as quick as possible by getting into routine, then I'll fall off the path. So.
Wow. Thanks for sharing that, because every athlete listening would understand that. Mm. I'm sure every fighter definitely understands it. And even acknowledging it, I dare say you're already putting things in place.
Mm.
Because one day you'll retire and that's when you really miss it, yeah, right?
For sure. And that's why I think I'm so lucky that I had that injury. Like that 4 years off, like that was massive. And I was doing high-risk things, like getting into high-risk businesses that I wasn't good at, like trying to find that same risk that I go through in fighting. We started up a chicken wings and beer restaurant in the middle of COVID. Like, that's not the smart decision.
Very high risk.
Yeah. And it was me and Ty. Ty was like, do you want to start up a beer company? And I was like, he was like, I know you like beer. I don't like beer. Ty didn't like beer at the time. He does now.
Yeah.
But, and I was like, yeah, sure. And then it's two fobs starting up a beer. So we ordered all this beer and we're like, with no contracts, no way to sell it. And we're like, man, this is way too much. What are we going to do? I was like, what do you like having with beer? Chicken wings. So we opened up Wings Out West to sell the beer. And then we've made pretty much every mistake with the beer. Like we had these lids popped off one time with some of our contractors there. So they molded over and we lost that contract.
Yeah.
Just silly stuff. Like these cans are now printed, but before they were stickers. So we had to hand stick each label on the cans.
And you did yourself.
Yeah. And then we had boxes that when us and Ty were probably had too many beers and some boxes were missing six packs. So people did it was me and it was us and the boys packing these boxes. So it's been a cool journey. And now even when you're saying the official, that was a big thing for me, the partner of the UFC, to see our brand on the UFC, even fighting for the company that I grew up being as a kid, and then opening up a company that now sponsors the company that I watched as a kid. And we were the first athletes to sponsor the UFC.
No, it's a crazy story, yeah. And it's such a success story too, because I've enjoyed watching all that. Like I remember when you did the beer in the wings. I love seeing people that I know. I know we know each other through a lot of mutual contacts, but I love seeing people have a crack and succeed the way you guys have. Like to now see it sponsoring the UFC, you have your own brewery. You've got Nathan Cleary involved, genius move. And I know he's invested in it and loves it. And you've got really good people, but I love the way you're very raw about the mistakes you made as well. Because, you just, as you said, you just two mates just decided to have a crack. And you said the word risk. I dare say, though, you're fighting. When I see you take risks in the fight game, they're very calculated risks. Mm. And you've, your level of expertise and your level of knowledge and your resources that you have are at a different level to starting a beer company where your risk were like just crazy risk.
Yeah, you know? No. But
were they calculated? Was anyone behind this that's
Yeah,
calculated?
Definitely. We have business partners that are helping us out now. Like there's, we've got a lot of help. But I've definitely taken a lot of risks, like even with my fighting career.
Have you?
Like I made my first run before I got injured was probably the worst, like risk-wise, I made dumb decisions because – I had such a quick rise in the UFC that I went bang, 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 and then I'm fighting like Shogun, Ilya Latifi, and OSP were all in the top 10 or fought for the championship or had the had been champion. Shogun had been champion, and I was on my fourth or fifth fight in the UFC. My fourth or fifth fight in MMA, and they were on maybe 40 fights each. So because I'd had that rise, they've chucked me in there and I was learning on the job.
Yeah.
So even though if you offer me a hard fight, I'm like, hell yeah. So when but business wise, it's not a smart decision because now I'm fighting the top guys for not much money.
Ah.
Whereas if you're going to be smart, you want to build up your money and then fight the top guys.
Okay.
So now as I've gotten older, maybe a little bit wiser, that's now you're trying to make smarter business decisions.
Okay. So because back then, I know it's a business, but it was a love for you, it was a passion for you. Fighting's like, but now you've realized it can be a business.
Yeah.
You're taking it as a business, right?
Well, I might have 3 years pushing it left in the top levels of MMA.
Yeah.
So I have to make smart decisions because otherwise it's just going to be a flash in the pan.
Okay.
So,
well, what can you do business wise to increase your value as a fighter? Like, explain it to me or even listeners around. Like there's some fighters that go out there and if anyone thinks UFC, surely they think Conor McGregor comes straight to mind.
Yeah.
He's such a good seller.
Yeah.
What can you do to sell?
Well, see, a big thing is with UFC fighters, we don't get to put sponsors on our shorts and everything.
Yeah.
So we used to be able to put sponsors on our shorts. So you have to try and figure out what you can do to make money. And one thing that me and Ty have been trying to do is use our platform to be able to start other things to make money from it.
Yeah.
But Ty's also he's a marketing genius with what he does. But it's just not me. It's hard for me to talk. Like I said, it's just not me to go out there and start going at people and talking. And not that Ty does that much, but it's just with the Conor McGregor and stuff, the shit talking, everything. I'd rather go I've got tattooed across my neck, Battle Never Lies, me and my dad do.
Yeah.
And that's because it was a lot of people will get into your face and screaming and going this in the weigh-ins. But I don't look my opponent in the eyes until we walk in the octagon. So even at the weigh-ins, you'll see I never lock eyes with my opponent or anything because I believe that they lie with their eyes until you're in there. So you'll look at someone. If we're having a face-off, someone will be mean mugging you and going, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. But once they lock the octagon doors... Now I can see if you're what your eyes are saying. It's now I can look at you in the eyes and I go, oh, nah, I got you.
I like that.
Yeah. So it's because battle never lies, right? It's when we're in there and now you know I can punch you in the face, now I get to see what your true emotions are.
Yeah. So when someone's staring you out, you just point to that tattoo.
I'm not even looking at them. One guy had screaming in my face and everything and I was like, I don't get it because I was tomorrow we get to punch each other.
Yeah.
It's so all of this, it doesn't matter. Nothing. Unless you want to punch on now.
Well, see, I see you as, and you may remember, I brought you and Ty into the Origin camp once.
That was cool.
State of Origin camp. And you may remember how I introduced you, I'm not sure, but I introduced you to that team of players as the ultimate martial artist.
Mm.
When I think martial artists, I think discipline. Mm. I think you might have to remind me, but you're a black belt in this, this, this and this, your whole life. So I introduced you as that. I may have introduced Ty as just this, this Western Sydney banger who will not take a backward step to anyone, and we needed that characteristic as well. So can you imagine putting as a footy player, you got the mindset of a fighter, the discipline of you and being a master at so many disciplines. Like UFC, you've got to be good at this, 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 this and this. You've got to master all that. Then have a bit of Thai.
Yeah.
You might remember that day we also had
Mundine, I think.
Mundine came in and we had Bilal Akaway.
Yes.
Yeah. So it was a great room and plus the State of Origin team.
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember me and you kind of sparred for a few seconds because I wanted to feel what it's like in front of you.
Yeah.
Like, I remember Tariq Sims loved it. He loved having you punch him in the face.
Yeah.
It was so good. He was like, Tyson Pedro punch him in the face. But I, you know, I love like a little bit of body shots with the boys or whatever. And but I just had to like tap one of the boys out and say, give me a go, because I wanted to feel what it was like. Like, seriously, you stand in front of you and you feel when you were like just pulling your punches up by that much, thank God, to feel that moment that you could kill me like that was like a pretty crazy rush. Like, you are that skilled. What are the disciplines you've mastered and what is your background in that martial arts space before jumping in a cage?
Yeah. So I've got three black belts, Kenpo Karate, Japanese Jiu-Jitsu and Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. And we started Kenpo and Japanese Jiu-Jitsu with my dad when we were about, I think, four years old. And then I actually didn't get my black belts for those two until I was, I think, it was after my wedding. Dad, I was going to be the youngest black belt in Japanese Jiu-Jitsu or Kenpo. I can't remember which one it was. I think I was 12 and the grandmaster was going to give me the black belt. My dad said no because he said it would go to my head. So as a kid, I'm thinking, my dad hates me. But he gave it to me when I was like 23, I think. But that was another lesson. Like, you know, dad, he always thinks that he's given out these these lessons. But
19 years
to
get a black belt.
Well, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, I think, took me 10 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and I actually prefer it. Like, you know, some people will go like, oh, I got my black belt in like a year or 2 years and nothing against that. But you can't be a master of something. I don't believe from like my experience. Like, I think... Like, I can roll with anyone and I can tell them if you've done mat time. Do you know what I mean? It's just time on the mats. Like,
you can't buy time.
Yeah, yeah. It's just I can feel someone wrestling and like if they tell me that they're this experience or whatever, you can feel it straight away and it's just time on the mats. And that's one thing that happened with like at City Kickboxing, like that I just love about being there. It's like just a bunch of dudes that just go in it's just basic mass. Like everywhere else that I've trained, it's like two times a day, maybe three. And then you go there for camp and it's four or five sessions a day. It's like your body's wrecked, but you're just putting in more work. It's more time.
Yeah. It's maths.
Yeah.
It's basic maths.
Yeah.
It's the way you've described that is the same in coaching. Like you can't buy time in coaching.
Yeah.
Like, you can't buy it. You can't buy experience. You think about a doctor who wants to become an orthopedic surgeon that may study, I don't know, let's say 10 plus years.
Yeah.
You can't fast track that. Like you did 10 plus years before you got your black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu.
Yeah.
In and amongst that, you've had to become good at striking, at kickboxing, at boxing. What about your first boxing fight?
So I actually prefer striking. I think like I love Jiu-Jitsu and I'll do Jiu-Jitsu my whole life. But there's something about just punching someone in the face and getting punched in the face. Like I don't know why. I just really like striking and boxing in particular. But I was doing BJJ as a kid, and then we started at Blacktown Hit Squad, and I started boxing there in amateur boxing. And I think I only had 6 fights. I won the intermediate state championships, and then I wanted to go on a run for. The Olympics. That was like the original goal when dad moved overseas. So, but yeah, and then just life. So fell off with boxing, and then sort of fell into MMA. It was always going to happen. To be honest, like dad was running King of the Cage at the time. I don't know. Like I think I'm pretty lucky, to be honest, to know that you're going to do something. It's like these guys that are playing footy. Like they always knew that they were going to play.
Yeah.
Football. It was like I always knew that I was going to fight. Yeah. And they were kicking the footy, we were choking each other out in the backyard. So it was like I always knew that I wanted to do fighting, but dad just didn't want me to fight.
So you said you wanted your love of boxing there. What could I just throw to the Australian boxing scene at the moment? What you think of that? how all the boys are going and who you follow. And
But man, like the whole Australasian, like and Pacific actually, New Zealand and Australia, just we've got some killers at the moment. Like kickboxing, boxing, like Jai Opetai's fight, crazy. I love Jai. We just got some awesome boxers. At first, I wasn't a big fan of the like how Australia really got behind this NRL guys fighting.
Yeah.
But like I sat back. I was like, you know, it's helped promote the sport, to be honest. Like there's, even though, and it was actually through Paul Gallen, he sold me on it.
Yeah.
I was like, you know, he went out there and did it, and for real. So he was one of the ones that changed my mind on that. But we've got a lot of good boxers in Australia and kickboxers.
Jai Opetaia, his last two fights.
He's an animal.
Yeah.
Absolute animal. And it's, I don't know, like outside looking in, it looks like his whole mindset's changed, like especially since that broken jaw. It was like,
mate, if you could. So I've known Jai since he was a kid, and I think I've watched him spar with you before.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah.
I think my head touched my ass about 30 times.
But if you could go back, I'm not sure if you listened to any of these podcasts, but I did one with Jai. His mindset now as a seasoned pro, as a, I don't know what he's at, 23-0 maybe, like his mindset now, I mean, I always saw it as a kid. I mean, it's in his blood. It's like you're fighting at four. He's a third, fourth generation fighter. Yeah. But it's such an elite mindset now. Yeah. And you really get that with the chat we had. And I just love seeing what he's doing. I mean, the last one going to fight in England and fight at Wembley.
Yeah.
You know, we used to watch him fight in the little shows, you know.
It is surreal, like, and it is exciting seeing all the boys come through, and but even like that's just bit like brought back memories of like me and Ty like fighting on the same card, the RSL and
St Mary's
RSL at the band club,
yeah,
and then we're fighting on the same cards in the UFC, like in the, like all over the world. It's like it's pretty cool.
That is cool. Could you tell me what it feels like? Like, we have to talk about your latest fight and the way you ended that fight and the celebration. Like, that become pretty viral, that celebration. Can you talk me through the fight and the celebration and what it meant and how that felt?
Yeah. So that this is one of the reasons I like doing the podcast, because you don't really get to sometimes like really think about the moment. But this fight, there was a big lead up because my previous fight I got sick, and then like had, I think it was like 7 months between fights. So that 7 months, you're just thinking about that last loss, like of how much it sucked, of like the after effects of it, like and then it really pushed me hard in training, like mentally everything, because I just shut down and I was just like I went pretty dark in like this dark mode of like just wanting to really hurt someone, like just because I was like, I'm not letting that happen again. And and then also the guy that I was fighting, the pleasure man, he was like, I don't know, there was something about him that just didn't sit well with me. I didn't really like his face.
He's
like,
the name to start
with. Yeah, like it was just, I don't know, there was just something. I don't know if it was actually him or a persona, but it was the first person that I wanted to punch at the weigh-ins. Like, usually I'm really reserved, but I was like literally getting itchy knuckles. Like, I was like, I'm going to swing on this guy if he says one thing.
So you actually, usually you've been so professional. It's just you and the opponent's very disciplined world you live, but you dislike this guy.
Yeah. And he was just like, I've watched previous fights of his, and he would go fake to shake their hand and like not shake their hand. And I was just like, if he does any of this stuff, I'm just going to slap him straight in the mouth. But and then the whole thing, we were on the at the press conference, and he said something about my wife. Well, I think he said something about my wife.
I saw this. Yeah.
And then I was just like, man, it was funny. My sister was like, I was really nervous about the fight and like the lead up. And then he said something about your wife, and then she was like, oh, you fucked up.
Game over.
Yeah.
Bad move.
Yeah. She knows. Don't talk about the family. So
yeah.
As soon as we were in there, I think he was just surprised by with the celebration. So leading up to it, I was in the back with Israel at we're warming up for one of the fights, and I just, after we finished doing it, it was like our final tune-ups, and I just hit, like, I pictured myself hitting him and then, like, just doing that celebration. It's actually the end to one of our sword katas from Japanese jiu-jitsu. Like, when you finish, like, the kata, you put the sword away, clean off the blood off the sword, and then you put the sword away. Like, that's how we were taught when I was, like, 12. And it just came to me and I saw me, like, punching the guy and then... To be honest, I actually saw myself cutting his head off. But yes. Just a joke, just a joke.
Peace through violence.
But no, so yeah, I just saw it and then I was doing my weight cut and it was pretty, like this weight cut that I did was real raw. Like one thing, it's like a transformation sort of thing, you know, like you cut weight and your body sort of goes into this primal thing because you start feeling hungry and like you're kind of like losing all the water and your body like feels like it needs to hunt, right? Like it's like when you need to search for food, yeah. Like your body goes into this mode where it's like we need to get food. So you go into like this hunt mode. Well, for me it was, and we had like this samurai music going on in the background and all the boys are sitting there and they're screaming. It was like a general going to war and like all the soldiers and everyone screaming in the room. We had nutritionists in there and they were like, you could see that they were sort of freaking out because it was like their first one. Yeah. It's like, I'm going to kill you. I'm going to take your family. I was like, well. But so, and then I stood up after we cut the weight and I did the move again. And I was just like, I could see him laying under my feet when I was doing it. It's just like visualization.
Yeah. Like you said, your dad had you doing this when you were 12.
Yeah.
Which is a form of meditation that he didn't realize.
Yeah.
But you visualize this.
Yeah.
And that end of the Carter, and then he said, I bet you every UFC fighter listening knows now, do not talk about your family. That's a bad move.
I would love for them all to do it because it got me into the craziest. Yeah, if they do, it helps me.
Yeah, and then so let's go back to the actual finish.
Yeah. I think he was surprised maybe by the speed or the power because I think the first hit that I hit him with like I saw it in his eyes, like
yeah.
I think he was just surprised, and I just felt just on, you know, like everything felt perfect. I could only see him. I could hear perfect, like I could hear my coaches perfectly. Can you imagine 20,000 people, but you can only hear one voice. As like it's just everything was just on, and everything was connecting, and I'd hit him like I think three right hands, and when he dropped, I was just angry that the ref stopped me because I wanted to keep hitting him. And then I stood up, I did the move. And the one crazy thing about it was that if I wasn't like emotional after the fight or anything, because it felt like it was a replay in my head because I'd seen it so many times. Yeah. So it was pretty surreal because I was just like, just walked down and I was just like, man, that I'd seen the crowd. I'd seen the celebration. I'd seen the knockout. So.
Wow. So there's be some people listening that are athletes as well. A lot of coaches listen, but there'll be athletes listening. The power in that visualization, there is science to it. There is a wiring of the brain that when you do a certain thing, it wires, but when you visualize it, it actually wires the same way.
Yeah. So
there's a lot of power in this.
Yeah. Have you read or listened to much Joe Dispenza?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, so I did a lot of his meditation, and I've also got a mental coach in New Zealand that I work with, David Neath.
Okay.
And it's a lot about the visualization and stuff, and and a lot of journaling as well. Like during fight camp, I do lots of journaling and lots of visualization meditation. So like I'll be running maybe two or three diaries because I have one for everything training wise, like if you're learning so much, it's hard to remember. Like you one class, you might learn what, five jiu-jitsu moves, and then you've got your striking class and another five moves, and then you've got your MMA class, and you've got another five moves. So I'd have one diary just writing all of that down. Then I have like one diary that's just like letting all my thoughts out. Like you've got so much going on in camp, family, whatever. So I just let all my thoughts out at night so I'm not overthinking or staying up. And then I'll just do, meditation or whatever. And I just visualize the fight over and over again in my head. Like,
brilliant.
And one of the big things that changed as well was with David Neath was the alter ego. like creating an alter ego. And because like Tyson Pedro, he might have faults or he's had losses or he like, but you can create something in your mind that's like unstoppable. And that was Ronan for me. That was the samurai. And like you practice doing it in training that you're able to, so every time that you go into sparring, you're turning it on, right? So then when you're in the fight, you do the same method leading up to it. By the time you walk into the cage, I've become this thing that's unstoppable.
I love this. Yeah. I love this. Have you shared this with anyone? Because there's people listening that, first of all, the journaling, I recommend it highly. Do it with every athlete, every player in similar ways. But I love that you had a few journals for different things. But this visualization of it and this alter ego character, like this is Kobe Bryant, Black Mamba type stuff.
Yeah, and you think of all the best people, they all do it. Israel has the Stylebender, Beyonce has Sasha Fierce. They become this thing and you can do it for anything, not just fighting, right? Like if I want to be the best father, what do you create? Like you create like – Tyson Pedro doesn't know how to be a father, so I go like, oh, okay. But
you model it off someone
that's a good that you think is a good dad, right? Like so
it's
you can use it for like anything and it helps.
So when you podcast, should we be like thinking we're Joe Rogan at the moment?
You look, you got the bald head. You're halfway there.
Oh, I'm going to journal this now. And every time I come in, I'll just go, I am Joe Rogan. I am Joe.
100%.
Yeah, yeah. Hey Joe, if you're listening,
He probably is. To be honest,
would love you on the show.
Yeah, 100%.
What's he like? What's Joe Rogan like?
He's always been a gentleman. Like, I don't know him well, but he's always been a gentleman. Like, spoken a couple times, and I really like him. I would love to go on the show eventually, but I feel like I've got like, I want to do a lot of things in my life before I go on there.
Seriously though, some of the stuff you've shared with me, like even this samurai stuff, like. Joe loves that shit.
Yeah, yeah.
Like some of the stuff you could share, I feel like, you know, me and you have only caught up just randomly over the years, but I feel like there's so much coming out of you that Joe Rogan would love, man. He would love. What's Dana White like?
And I've met him less than I've met Joe Rogan.
Fair income.
Yeah, yeah. Because there's matchmakers that deal with all the fights and everything, so... Dana White's just like the boss. I think the most I spoke to him was after this last fight in Sydney.
Because he loved the samurai. Mate, everyone loved that samurai.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is I follow your Instagram and stuff after. It was so cool. There was a press conference where I think you were informed that the guy wasn't actually talking about your wife. He was talking about someone's...
The presenter's wife.
The presenter's wife in the crowd, the media wife.
Yeah, well, he was confused as well because no one knew and like,
And meanwhile, it fueled you to hate him that much.
Well, like I do it all the time anyway. Like I used to do it already, but after watching like Michael Jordan and you know,
The Last Dance.
The Last Dance, yeah. How he makes up stories, like he'll make up things in his head and then that's what will drive him. Like I used to do that like already, but then when I saw him do it, then I was like, oh shit, like I really want to lean into this. Yeah. So that was a perfect example. Like I made it up in my head that he said something about his wife, my wife. And then I wanted to kill him. Like, that's like, you can just make it up all the time.
That's so good.
And like, you think of all the best people in the world, like your Conor McGregor's and stuff. Like, I don't want to say delusional, but it's like the stories that they make up in their head that they're the best in the world before they actually are. That's made up, right? So, then they became it. But
I believe in that stuff.
Yeah.
I believe in that stuff. You put it out there.
Yeah.
Like Connor's the best at it.
Yeah.
You've referred, during this chat, you've referred to different people like even Michael Jordan. You obviously consume a lot of this type of content.
Mm.
Who's influenced you in the fight game, sport game, other sporting people? Like what influence have you really soaked up?
This is why I say like things are supposed to happen for a reason because it was during my injury, like in my time off, that I really lent into the mental side of things. Like I started listening to the Joe Dispenza, like with Winning in Mind. That's a really good book about winning. He was a Olympic gold medalist in shooting. That one was like a really cool thing. And that was big on visualization. So he didn't have access to a shooting range. So he had to dry fire and just visualize it. And he won the gold medal or something like that, like crazy. And one of the journals I read, but... Sporting wise, like I just, it's like how I do with MMA. Like I'll go to CKB or like Sydney West. I train there, or like my jiu-jitsu coach in Melbourne, or all of these gyms that I've been to. I'm training at Jackson's in New Mexico. Like these with all the greatest fighters, but they're not me. But I can take something from them, like you, and I think that's how like I've figured out like. With MMA, with life, like you try and take the best parts or that you might be able to fit into yours.
Yeah.
And then, okay, that works for me. I'm going to use that. And because there's no one person for sure that I've like really lent into, but maybe Israel. Israel's had a big influence recently.
Yeah.
Yeah. On just his outlook, his training, like, but same thing. I just will really intently like, watch someone who's the best at what they do, right?
Yeah.
Like in whatever aspect, like Tiger Woods. It was like, oh, what do you do that makes you the best? And then I was like, okay, I'll like read on what was their mental side of it, what was their prep side, like why? And then,
well, you're showing a real student side of you now, like the best in any sport are proper students. Mm. So if me and you could go on a study tour right now, anywhere in the world, we could buy a ticket and go and learn off someone right now, tomorrow. Who do we go to?
That's a really good question. For personally?
Yeah.
Well, who I would want to learn from? Hmm. That's a really good question.
Well, we could go to Joe for podcasting.
For podcasting, Joe, for sure. You know...
fighting or personal?
Oh, for fighting. Man, I already sort of do it. Like for fighting, I've gone to New Zealand. I found it in City Kickboxing.
There you go.
Yeah, it would be City Kickboxing for sure.
Yeah.
I went to Greg Jackson's, which was, I've dreamed of going there because that was the best gym in the world at the time.
Okay.
When like, so as a kid, I was like, I really want to go there. Then I went there and it was like mad experience. I trained with the best in the world. I got to get trained by the best coaches in the world, but it just didn't suit me. Like, and it was also costing me a fortune. Like I was in the red every fight camp.
Yeah.
Like it was costing me 50,000 just to go over, and I was getting paid 30,000, I think, maybe at the time.
Off sponsors on your shorts, which you now can't have.
Yeah. So everything in my martial arts career has sort of guided me to City Kickboxing. And I can feel that this will be the final chapter of my martial arts career at City Kickboxing.
Awesome. Okay, so what can you see happening for you in your fight game? What is possible for Tyson Pedro aiming high?
I don't want to say it on air.
Let's do the Conor McGregor's.
because I have a goal, but it's not what anyone is – will be expecting.
Well, I know you're going to sell your beer company for $500 million. So, but I was interested in your in the fight one, but that's cool. Yeah. You can keep that.
I'm only staying in the UFC because I want to go for the title. There's no other reason that I would want to be in the UFC.
Yeah.
But there's been a variation in plans, I would say, that I'm just trying to figure out. I'm actually in a bit of a, I would say, limbo of what direction I want to take, I'd like to be honest, because I've got something that's pulling me in one direction and I don't know if I'm ready to take that yet because it's a big jumping course.
Okay. Yeah. I'm sure people will see this, keeping following you from now on. I know I will. You've got me actually – you've actually just got me so curious that, and people will be. That actually happens to people. There's a reaction in the brain that makes you curious to follow and find out what that is. So I'll be following every move you make, and I'll see where it goes, and I'll be so happy whatever you do. I'll see it. You know, mate. I'll probably finish with the way I usually start. I see a lot of tattoos, which mean a lot. I want to go there. I usually start by getting to know how someone grew up and their family background, and just get a bit to know. Could you share with me a bit of the tattoos? I do know there's a Drink West tattoo somewhere because I saw that on a picture. But there's a lot of meaning going on here. I mean, you even said the one about you and your father have. But what have we got?
Man, like honestly, it's like I've stopped getting some. Well, besides the drink West one, I just stopped getting because I was hurting too much. I'm over it. But it's just my story of my life, to be honest. I could look through and like, have you watched the movie Prison Break?
Yeah.
The TV show? It's like sort of like reading my book of my life, man. Like there's at all different stages, like of like different tattoos that I got or where I was at in my life. Like it's just my story. Like sometimes I'll just look at like a certain thing when I'm at training. I go, yeah, like bang it. Like, but like even my Japanese sleeve, like that was me and dad, like with the Japanese martial arts that we're going through. So it's all Japanese on that side.
Yeah.
Samoan on this side. So it was like culture, sticking to my roots and obviously my tatau.
Explain the tatau for people.
So it's just a traditional Samoan tattoo that I got with my father.
It's painful, right?
Oh, the worst. Man, some people say it doesn't hurt, but fuck that. it was
everywhere, right?
Yeah. No, I've just like, yeah, it's
you joined the army once.
That's actually my cousin. He was killed in Afghanistan. So that's the hat that I wear out to the fights. So yeah, he was killed in Afghanistan. His mother sent me his hat, and it's just my way of paying tribute to him. Every fight I wear, the fight to say like he's coming to war with me.
That's beautiful, man.
Yeah.
Like, mate, Tama used to say, "This kid is the world champion one day." Like, but he's been away.
Yeah. I got even like shorts from James Tahuna, bro. Like, I was sparring James when I was 16. 15, 16. Well, I was training with him all the way up, but I was sparring James like so young, and I've still got these shorts that he wrote to me, and he wrote on them like, "Dreaming you will achieve," and like gave me, and he was like, "You'll be in the UFC." And like, you know, back then James didn't talk at all.
I know, man.
So like I'm so surprised, like even now, because in the last 5 years I think I've talked more to James than I had in the last 15 years combined.
Yeah.
And like, do you know what, like the only thing that I can think of is if you met James during his fight career, he was so intense that I'm not sure if he knew how to turn it off.
Yeah.
He was always in the fight.
That's a good description of him, man.
Like he always seemed like he was in the fight. Like he was always on edge. And I was like, I know a couple of people that like some people find it hard to turn off that switch.
Yeah.
And like as soon as he retired, it was like, oh, he's able to chat with you and like talk. And
well,
like,
do you know what? I'm sure he had a fear of talking too that you mentioned before.
Mm.
Very introverted.
Yeah.
A lot of things went on in his life. Yeah, there's sure. a lot of things. And now he shares his story. It's fantastic. He jumped on here one day and
he's very well spoken.
Yeah, very well spoken. Yeah, man. Well, I just want to say thanks heaps for your time. The bit about fear of speaking, like first of all, saying that you had that, but you don't see it. You can't see that. I mean, you also do your own podcast now.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, that was
why deliberate to practice it?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, like after I did that GQ thing around about that time, like I was realizing that I had like the fear of it. And like I told you, if I'm scared of something, I'll just attack at it.
Yeah.
So I started up a podcast where I have to do the most talking.
It's funny you mentioned you were about to make a speech and you had the sweat.
Yeah.
So I was about to make a speech at a really formal event, black tie event, like world champions everywhere. I followed Alan Jones. Alan Jones, the best speaker ever. He was on stage. Hectic. And I went next, right?
Yeah.
So Danny Green saw me backstage.
Yeah.
And I'm reading through these notes. And he come up to me. He said, "What are you doing?" And he could tell I was nervous. Mm. And I said, "Man, I've got to go up next after Alan." And he was like, he grabbed a bit of paper, screwed it up, threw it down. He said, "Mate, speak from the heart. It'll be okay." And I was like,
"Nah, fuck that."
Great advice. But I've found myself ever since that little bit of because he was a bit of a genius marketing himself as a fighter and a great speaker. I actually loved that advice from him because I always now I don't do anything scripted.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
A lot of the stuff I speak on is usually a topic I'm confident to speak on. But I found that it's great advice. Mm. You just speak from the heart and
For sure.
You know, and you're doing it great, man. Like, and you're staying you. Like, I've watched your press conferences and that. Like, there's no fakeness. It's it's you, you know, and it's.
It's a lot easier. it's a lot easier.
Yeah.
When you just be you.
Yeah. Well, you're doing it with this beer.
Yeah.
Congratulations, mate.
Thank you very much, brother. Appreciate it. Cheers.
I love following you and all the best.
The man.